It's Friday, August 12th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. North of the border, Hoynes, he made it across. He's in Canada with most of the Guardians. James Karinchak, the only exception, not there in Toronto for this weekend series with the Blue Jays. The first place Guardians, first place by a game and a half, their biggest lead in the division all season. After a comeback, after surviving a series finale in Detroit where they had the lead, gave it, the Tigers came back and tied it late. And then the Guardians, really relying on their bullpen, came through and won 4-3.
Yeah, Joe, another extra inning win. They're 9-2 in extras this season. Carl Willis and Terry Francona had to mix and match with their bullpen late after really Zach Plesac's best start in weeks. The game before, they got five scoreless innings out of their pen. And really, Emmanuel Class A wasn't available. Karinchak wasn't available. So he goes to Hedges, Stefan, De Los Santos, and Brian Shaw comes riding out of the bullpen in the 10th to get his first save of the season. And Joe, is there anything this guy can't do? He opens, he pitches middle relief, he pitches late relief, and now he's closing.
I think, if you took a poll of the guys out there in the bullpen, obviously Emmanuel Clase should get some sort of consideration for a postseason award. But if you look at the heart and soul and who the MVP right now out there in the bullpen is, it's got to be Brian Shaw, just for his ability to pitch in a variety of different ways, and just the unselfishness of his game. Class A, what, leads the league 26 saves?
26 saves.
26 saves. I mean, that's impressive. But Brian Shaw coming in there and basically doing anything that's asked of him, it's pretty crazy that he's doing that in a bullpen full of basically young pups.
Yeah, and I like what Francona said yesterday. In a situation like that, in the 10th inning, they've got a one run lead thanks to Oscar Gonzalez, and you need somebody to calm things down, and he went to the veteran. And, Shaw, admittedly hasn't been having his greatest season, but he wanted someone to calm things down. And Shaw did it and retired the side in order, the top of the Tigers lineup in order, two strikeouts for the save. And, a satisfying sweep. And, like you said, just an impressive performance by Shaw.
If Eli Morgan hadn't made everybody nervous at the end of the game on Wednesday, and then maybe Emmanuel Clase is available in that situation to come in and close it. But he wasn't. He had to come in and work on Wednesday. So he had, Tito, being smart, trying to manage his innings, not wanting to pitch him three games in a row. Karinchak, maybe he had also worked, back-to-back games, and maybe you might try to squeeze an inning or something out of him there, but Shaw was your best available option for the time, and he came through. It's against the Tigers, so it's not like you're doing it against a first place team, but anytime you're picking up a major league save, that's pretty impressive. That bullpen, like you said, over the last 2 days, really sort of pieced together and got the Guardians, two wins there. That really, the offense didn't show up after the first couple of innings in both games.
Yeah, definitely. What they go, they went 20 in Wednesday's 5-2 win, the 3-2 win Wednesday. They went like 20 straight outs. I mean, after score, taking a 3-0 lead in the first two innings, they were shut down, but they didn't score again. And Francona was saying, the strong starting pitching over the last three or four games really was able to keep the bullpen fresh and allowed them to do what they did the last two games. Joe, in the last four starts, Quantrill, McKenzie, Bieber, Savali, and Plesac have allowed three runs in 31 and a third innings. So, you know, that's a pretty good run right there. And, you know, they're going into Toronto now with their three top guys, you know, Quantrill, McKenzie, and Bieber, ready to go against, you know, a really tough Toronto team.
Right, and Toronto's suffered some big-time injuries. They really don't have a rotation that's set. They've got two unknown, you know, starters for Saturday and Sunday. I don't know if they've announced their rotation yet, but all of that adds up to Cleveland being in first place, a game and a half up, because Minnesota didn't play on Thursday. Minnesota now in Anaheim. They will be taking on the Angels, while, you know, in scoreboard watching, while the Guardians are playing in Toronto. This is an opportunity here. If you can take two of three from Toronto, you pretty much guarantee yourself coming back home in first place.
Yeah, definitely. This is, you know, they did what they should have done in Detroit. You know, I mean, if you take two out of three, that's good. You sweep the series, that's even better. Now you've got a chance against Toronto. You know, you played well against them early in the season in Cleveland. And we'll see what, you know, Toronto's got a lot to, you know, they're playing for the wild card here too. They're in, you know, they're in pretty good position in the wild card race. But it's not going to be easy, for sure. And, you know, you look at the top three teams in the Central, Joe. The Guardians have won five straight and 7-3 in their last 10. The Twins have lost three straight, 4-6 in their last 10. And the White Sox have lost two straight and are 5-5 in their last 10. So it's still a real pretty close race.
Yeah, it's and you've got more than a, you know, maybe a month and a half to sort of get things headed in the right direction. But you also look ahead at the remaining schedule, and it's pretty favorable for the Guardians, especially sort of end loaded there when you're playing Kansas City six times in the final week of the season. You kind of look at that and think to yourself, there's an opportunity there. But you come home next week, and it's your last time facing Detroit this season, I believe. I'm pretty sure. So, you know, you got to make hay where you can in that regard. The offense, you talked about it sort of disappearing there after the first couple of innings, but in those first couple innings, the last couple of days, it's been the top of the order. It's been Steven Kwan, Ahmed Rosario again contributing, Oscar Gonzalez coming up with a couple of big hits on Thursday. What are we seeing out of particularly Kwan? Kwan comes out there and jacks a home run, and then he goes and he makes a crazy sliding attempt at a foul ball and crashes into the wall. And you're thinking, you know, don't be dinged up too much. Tito said he's wanting to get Kwan off of his feet maybe a little bit, because he's played a lot of innings as a rookie. So you've got Will Benson there. Maybe you can move some things around. But what do you think of Kwan just recently? Another multi-hit game yesterday.
Yeah, he's really having a great season, Joe. As Plesac said, Kwan is the dude. He's you know, he's got to get some consideration for in the Rookie of the Year balloting, and he's just kind of making this whole lineup go. He sets the scene. He takes a lot of pitches. Right now, he's on pace to have the most hits by a Cleveland rookie since Kenny Lofton's rookie year in 1992. That's about 155 hits. So, you know, Kwan is rolling.
Yeah, he really is sort of that spark, that engine that gets things going at the top of the lineup. And you just it's hard to find something you don't like about his game right now. Tito's had guys of smaller stature that have produced big time for him before. Dustin Pedroia, a guy that stands out. You know, I don't think the eye test really matters right now with Kwan. He's a guy who he plays bigger than he is, and that's making all the difference right now for this team. We look at, you know, further down the lineup, the way that these rookies are contributing. Oscar Gonzalez last night, He's come back off of the injured list and really hasn't missed a beat, has he?
No, he had the big hit yesterday, of course, in the 10th, you know, with a two out hit, you know, with a, to drive in Jose Ramirez with what proved to be the winning run. You know, that was his second hit of the game. And he did it against, you know, Soto, the Detroit closer who had struck him out in the ninth inning, the inning before, the game before on three pitches. So he was waiting for him. And, you know, just he's hitting the ball hard. Joe doesn't look like he's missed a beat. And, you know, he's still going to right field. And, you know, Tito and coaching staff loves that.
Yeah, as long as he's looking to control the strike zone a little bit, look to the opposite field. When they did say, when they were asked about Gonzalez, they said, you know, here's a guy who he'll still go up there and swing hard and look to do damage and make hard contact, you know, until he gets to two strikes. And then once he gets to two strikes, he opens up the rest of the field and just takes what the defense or what the pitcher gives him in that situation. And it's worked out for him really well so far.
Yeah. And that's, you know, Francona has said it's a mature approach in a young hitter, especially a young power hitter. He's not looking to, you know, turn on everything and crank everything out of the park, that he'll, you know, he'll accept that outside pitch and go with it. And, you know, that's been an impressive part of his game.
Last night, the Major League Baseball Field of Dreams game took place out in Dyersville, Iowa. Have you ever been out to that Field of Dreams movie set out there? And I know probably not since they built the new you know, minor league park next to it, but the original Field of Dreams set. Have you ever had a chance to swing by there?
No, I've never been there, Joe.
We went on a family trip in 2018, and we didn't originally have plans to drive by there. But at one point, we started playing catch. My son and myself, we started playing catch in every state that we drove through. And my wife was looking, and she said, "Well, you know, it's only a couple hours out of the way if we drive through Iowa." So we managed to get to this Field of Dreams set, and I'm telling you, Hoynesie, it was an experience. It was, you know, this was before any of the it got built up in that area, before they, you know, built that new stadium off to the one side of the field. But you pull up and it looks just like it does in the movie. It really did. And there were a bunch of families playing just a pickup game there. Nothing formal. You just walked up there. There was a bat and a couple of balls. And you know, we all of a sudden we're playing like just a pickup game of baseball, and everybody's cheering for everybody, and even the little kids are getting their swings in and having fun. And it was a truly memorable experience on that trip. And you know, just getting to play catch, and I'm even right now, you can't see it on the podcast, but I'm wearing the t-shirt that I got there from the site there that says, "Hey Dad, you want to have a catch?" And it was just an amazing experience playing catch with my son on that field, and you know, walking in the corn and seeing everything there. I can see what the attraction is for people who, you know, who love the movie, but who really just love baseball and love sharing it with their family. I can see why that you know, so many people were excited about that game last night, and you saw a decent game between the Cubs and the Reds.
Yeah, I was listening to that game, Joe, driving from Windsor to Toronto last night, and the Reds commentators, announcers were talking about, you know, what a great experience it was, and not just how cool it was to have that game in that setting. And they said they were seeing, you know, they could see the movie set in the distance. I guess they've got a major league field, or a field built right on the same location, I guess.
Right.
It sounded like a great event.
Well, they opened the TV portion of it. They opened with Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. came walking out of the corn, and they turned to each other and they said, "Hey, Dad, you want to have a catch?" And they started playing catch there in the outfield. I mean, how cool is that? And you know, 13-year-old Joe is looking at Ken Griffey Jr., his hero, and watching him play catch with his dad in the outfield at that ballpark. And it was pretty. pretty amazing. Fun to watch that, and it must have been a great experience to be out there. One of these days, maybe if they continue to do this, I know there's construction in the area. They're going to build a youth baseball complex out there, sort of similar to like the Ripken Experience or the Cooperstown fields that they have, and they're going to build a whole new park out there. So I think next year Major League Baseball isn't going to be there. There isn't going to be a game,
Oh, yeah, right.
but since the teams that are going to be regularly playing there in the future would be the Cubs and the White Sox, maybe there's a chance the Guardians will have a game out there, and that would be pretty interesting to see, throwback uniforms on the players, and the Guardians and the White Sox playing in the Field of Dreams.
Joe, is it play? Let's play catch or have a catch?
Well,
What did you grow up saying?
that's the debate, isn't it? I always said, hey, Dad, you want to play catch,
Yeah, me too.
but the line in the movie is you want to have a catch, and I don't know if that was a mistake or if that's some sort of turn of phrase. I'm not familiar with that turn of phrase.
Went to college with some guys on the East Coast, and they said that, have a
They
catch.
said that.
Yeah,
Okay,
and I had never heard that before.
well, anytime my son asks if we want to go throw in the yard, it's you want to play catch. So,
Yeah.
but it's real emotional to watch that, and I can understand why a lot of people, think that that's a good thing for baseball to continue to do. And we've got the Little League World Series going on right now. I don't know. Did you see the video of the Texas team? I think it was a kid from Oklahoma who drilled the kid from Texas in the head on a pitch that got loose on him, and kid went down in a heap. He was down for a few minutes, but he got up. He made it to first base, and the pitcher was overcome with emotion. The pitcher was crying out there on the mound, and the batter, the guy who got beaned, actually walked up to him and said, "Hey man, it's okay. It's going to be all right." And he gave him a hug, and that was like one of these signature moments of the Little League. I think every year we see that with the Little Leaguers out there on TV. Somebody does something like that, and it reminds us, why we love the game so much.
Yeah, that was really cool. I saw it on, I saw a video of it. It was really an emotional thing. It was such a mature thing for that kid to do. The kid on first base. It was, sometimes, we don't give our children enough credit. That was a like sportsmanship, to the nth degree.
Yeah, it's real wholesome until some jackwad on Twitter turns it around and says, "Oh man, that's soft. Why is the kid crying on the mound?" and that kind of stuff. Twitter is undefeated when it comes to letting people say the worst possible thing at the worst possible time. But it was interesting to see that and see the reaction, and hopefully those kids continue on and get to Williamsport. I know it was a real experience last year going to Williamsport for the Little League Classic when the Guardians and the Angels played there last year. A lot of fun. We didn't have Tito. It would have been a lot more fun with Tito, I think, if he had made the trip, but he wasn't available at the time. So yeah, just a lot of fun. A lot of things I'm going to be thinking about when I'm watching these little leaguers over the weekend on TV.
Definitely, Joe. It's always a fun event to watch, and you just kind of marvel at the skills these kids have at such a young age.
Yeah, and don't forget, when it comes to youth baseball growing up, I think Austin Hedges is still the king. I think he the story that I did last year, he played on a team with something like seven or eight major leaguers eventually. Zach Davies, Chapman, Matt Chapman, Austin Hedges, Joe Musgrove, and a kid named Bryce Harper, joined them for a couple of tournaments. So, all pretty interesting. All right, we're going to wrap it up here for this edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. Poinsie, I hope they let you back into the country so we can see you next week in Cleveland. If not, we'll be doing this remotely for a while they detain you. But
All right, Joe.
we'll talk to you then.
All right, buddy.